I read a little while ago that microplastics are being found in the stools of babies in concentrations 10 to 20% higher than that of adults. What does that mean? I wanted someone to take us through the science who was right at the beginning of this. And Dr. Denise Hardesty, a CSIRO research scientist, was part of the team who showed us the plastics inside seabirds. And now they're inside our own kids. G'day, Denise.
Good morning.
It's not the nicest reason to be talking to you again, but how are microplastics getting into babies? Like, where in the food chain are they?
Well, I would say that the babies, infants in particular, are coming by them through direct contact. So that means in baby bottles, in carpet fibers, in toys that they're chewing on, in those sippy cup straws and all those sorts of things. Mobile phone cases are made of plastics. And little kids, little babies in particular, they chew and gnaw on everything.
And what do we need to do then to protect the environment around our children and make it healthier?
Well, so that's a really good question, because we're not going to get away from all of our plastics. We can be thoughtful about the food we purchase, the products that we give our kids to chew on and to play on. I've seen many a parent give their kid, you know, their mobile phone just to gnaw on, thinking it's harmless. But what we're finding is that, or not we, but the other researchers are finding that, yes, we are indeed finding that kids are ingesting that plastic. Now, let's put it into perspective, though, a little bit, right? So what's a nanogram? That is a billionth of a gram. And how much is a gram? So that's a 5-cent coin weighs almost 3 grams. A $2 coin weighs about 6 grams. Mm. So we're talking, you know, nanograms are the concentrations that we're talking. So in some ways, they're very, very small weights and small amounts, but we really don't want our plastic to be ending up in us, in our babies, in the adults, which are also found to consume it as well.
In this study, this was found in the baby's stool. So this is plastics that's passed through them. But is there evidence that the plastic could accumulate in our bodies?
Well, we simply don't know, and that's a really good question. And I think the thing that people are really concerned about in terms of human health and ingestion of plastics is what about the chemicals that the plastics may leach or may enter our bloodstream, or are the plastics so small that they're actually moving between cells and perhaps getting stuck or lodged in particular tissues? And these are really, really tricky questions to ask and to really to address, Rick, because we don't have a population of people to act as a control, because everyone in the world is exposed to and is around plastics.
16 past 7, ABC Radio Hobart. Dr. Denise Hardesty is a CSIRO research scientist responding to news that came out of a relatively small study that microplastics are appearing in babies in a higher concentration than in adults because, well, they interact through the to the world with their mouths, largely. Denise, you've been looking at plastics in our waterways and things here. And there's some slightly good news about being Tasmanian.
Well, I would say it's really promising. So we actually have a fantastic partnership underway with Hobart City Council at the moment. We are working on putting smart sensors in our stormwater drains, because we know that so much of our plastic and our waste ends up moving through the environment and, you know, getting stuck or moving through those, you know, those traps in those baskets that we see along the side of roadways. People often flick their cigarettes into those. And we're actually starting to monitor those now so that we can help give council the tools to know when and how frequently we need to go and manage those, when we need to empty those out, so that we're able to respond in a proactive way rather than a reactive way when they're starting to flood, when we have these high rainfall events. So that's really exciting news for Hobart. We're also putting camera traps out. So we are monitoring the trash running through our rivulets and streams and creeks. The issue that we have here in Hobart, which is such a happy problem, is that it's really hard to train our artificial intelligence, you know, machine learning models, because we find so little trash, relatively speaking, in our waterways. So I find that to be quite heartening.
Damn, we're good down here, aren't we? So good.
We are good.
We might even make this lockdown actually work, you know, so the entire weekends people are like, it'll never work. We'll never get it, but we'll find out at 6 o'clock tonight. So when you look at the sort of scale of the environmental challenge when it comes just to plastics, Denise, we're hearing all this discussion about net zero by 2030 or 2050. I mean, that's about the energy economy. What kind of commitments would be useful to make around our plastics economy?
Well, you know, we're really trying to look at what they call circularizing the economy. And so that means, what can we do design-wise to make sure that the products that we make, that they have a next life and a next life? So instead of basically making something, using it, and throwing it away, which we call a linear economy, make it, use it, toss it. You know, we're talking about turning those products back into other products so that we're not just starting with more and more virgin plastic materials and creating, making, and getting rid of more and more. I mean, I'm sure your listeners have heard by now that we find microplastics even in table salt. We find it in drinking water, you know. So if you want to do something, drink from the tap rather than from, you know, purchasing plastic water bottles, because what's in the, we found, you know, researchers have found less plastic in tap water than they have in purchased, quote unquote, really clean water. So there are simple things that we can do, and we really are starting to try to make some changes as a community, as a society, getting rid of some of the single-use plastics that are unnecessary. Those sorts of changes really can make a difference.
And should, do you think, governments be legislating for people to make products that don't leave bits of themselves through the environment?
Well, that's a really tricky question, and it's not really for me to say what government should or should not do. You know, research has found that, you know, most plastics that are studied do leach or lose or, you know, shed some fibers or materials into the environment. And we also have really good benefits from plastics, from medical equipment, from, you know, artificial valves and things like that. So we don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak, although we would certainly not like to find microplastics in our diapers and things like that, you know, but diapers, again, are made of plastic. So, you know, it's kind of a tricky question in terms of what can we do. If, however, there is legislation that encourages or supports the smart use of particular types of products and actually encourages and supports reusing, repurposing, remanufacturing, and staying away from particular types of plastics that we know are problematic, that will yield good benefits and good outcomes for society.
Great to talk to you today, Denise.
Thanks, Rick.